Legally, immigration is the jurisdiction of the federal government, which has the job of preventing undocumented workers from arriving in this country and with removing them if they're caught. But with an estimated 10.3 million illegal immigrants in this country, the system obviously isn't working. As that number increases, state and local governments are ever more involved in managing and fighting illegal immigration. In some places, that means formalizing the underground economy of day laborers. In others, sheriffs have come up with some creative charges to remove illegal immigrants from the community, such as trespassing. Today, we'll take a look around the country to see what illegal immigration looks like on the local level in our towns, our schools, our jails, and in our lives. Later on, we'll remember Star Trek's engineer Scotty. James Doohan, the actor behind the character, died earlier today. But right now, we want to hear from you. Is your community debating how to deal with day laborers? How are your local law enforcers dealing with illegal immigrants? Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and our email address is TOTN@npr.org. Joining us now is Ed Davis. He is chief of police in Lowell, Massachusetts. And thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So how has illegal immigration changed policing in your area, or has it in any way?
Well, it has. The number of illegal immigrants, a number in the thousands. We have a very diverse community. The school system has at least 12 or 13 different languages that they have students who are speaking. The number of illegal immigrants that we encounter day in and day out is high. Although in Lowell, we have not used the local laws to try to bring charges against illegal immigrants. We have a policy of attempting to establish trust in that community so that people who are sometimes in life and death situations will not feel hesitant to call us if they need assistance. And so the enforcement of the federal statutes is not something that we get involved in unless we find an illegal immigrant that's involved in other criminal activity.
So if you do pick up somebody for speeding, drunk driving, loitering, anything like that, and find out that they are an illegal immigrant, what happens? What happens to them what happens immediately?
Well, for minor crimes like that, nothing. We follow the criminal charges through the state operations that we have here, through the state courts. If they're involved in major crimes, drug trafficking, felonies, for instance, then we will contact immigration officials and let them know that we're having difficulty with these individuals.
So is that pretty much the norm that that most law enforcement agencies would not contact immigration unless they had picked up an illegal immigrant who was involved in a very serious crime?
Well, I believe in major cities in the United States that is the norm. I think that there are some cities that are focusing on this as a problem and may be working more actively with the federal government. But as we see it, if every illegal immigrant in the city believes that every time they talk to a police officer, they could be deported from the country, we won't have the connection with the community that we need at the local level to solve very serious crimes like homicides. So we don't enforce technical violations of the immigration law.
What kind of help do you get from the federal government, if any?
Well, we do have an ICE agent who's stationed here in a task force that deals with narcotics crime. It's called the Cross-Border Initiative. And so they work day in and day out with us on very serious crimes. But the average person who's in the community can call the police without fear of being deported.
Now, are you familiar with what's going on in Jaffrey, New Hampshire, where the local police are charging illegal immigrants with trespassing?
I am, in Jaffrey and in Hudson, New Hampshire. And my colleagues up there have a different community that they police, a different type of community. And they don't have to be worried about establishing a trust relationship with diverse members of the community. So it's a different problem for them. And while I understand why they're doing what they're doing, it's something that just wouldn't work in a city like Lowell.
What do you mean they don't have to worry about establishing trust? Why would it be different? Because it's a smaller
place? It's a small community that has virtually no immigrant population.
So this is an entirely new problem for them, and they're just coming up with creative solutions to it. Is that what you're saying?
I believe so.
And have you had a little more experience with it because you're a somewhat larger local government?
Right. We've had more experience with it, but also the challenge that we face is very different from the challenge that's faced in the town of Jaffrey or in Hudson, New Hampshire.
Do you think, though, that the federal government should be working a little more closely with local governments to sort of help them deal with some of these situations that they're coming up against that are new to them?
There's no question. This is something that should properly be handled at the federal level, and there really is a vacuum at that level on these issues. So because of that vacuum, people are attempting to deal with this jurisdiction by jurisdiction, and it doesn't work very well when that situation arises.
Now, I understand you also worked in Providence, Rhode Island.
Yes.
And what's the situation there? Is it different from these other places we've talked about, or...
Well, both Providence, Rhode Island, and Stamford, Connecticut, I've done some work in, and the day laborer problem is very different in Stamford, for instance, than it is here in Lowell. There's an enormous number of people in the downtown area looking for employment, and it results in crowd control problems. And as I recognized several years ago that this was a situation that the local police agency was not equipped to deal with, it happened all of a sudden, and there was really no guidance, it seemed, from federal authorities on how to deal with it. So it's the problem of illegal immigration is something that has migrated from the southern tier of the country into urban areas across the country with little or no preparation, and that's a serious problem.
Is it training that's needed, or?
Well, it's training and resources. I think that first we have to come up with a policy that makes sense, and then train it up with the local police agencies that are being confronted with this problem, and then provide the necessary resources to the communities that are struggling with this. And I think that's we're seeing that across the nation.
Yeah. Are you also experiencing, have experienced in some of these situations, ill will from the community that was there to begin with towards the illegal immigrants? Are they pushing for some of these sort of maybe more questionable practices?
I think you do see that, especially in light of the challenges that we face with terrorism right now. There's definitely been a knee-jerk reaction among people to be suspicious and cautious of people, and I think that that's manifesting itself in a call for more draconian measures.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Ed Davis is the police chief in Lowell, Massachusetts. He joined us from his office there. And as we just heard, across the country, communities are inventing their own ways to deal with some of the tensions that are created by illegal immigration. Joining us now in the studio is Seth Stern, who reports on immigration issues for the Congressional Quarterly. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's just talk about the federal first before we get to some more specific local stories, because we just heard Chief Davis saying that he feels that local governments and local officials are not getting the help they need for the federal government, and that, in fact, as more immigrants are coming in, more and more communities are being affected by this.
That's certainly true. I think there's widespread consensus across the political spectrum that the current immigration system and how it deals with illegal immigration is broken. You have 10 to 15 million illegal immigrants in the country and a flow of several hundred thousand new ones each year. And the system is not addressing that either problem.
Now, you recently wrote an article that focused on the situation in North Carolina. Tell us a little bit about that.
That's correct. And I think North Carolina is an example of one of the states that has a new influx. You used to have the gateway states like California or Florida, and now it's really spread the issue of illegal immigration to the Midwest and states in the South, such as North Carolina. They're both in the urban centers of North Carolina as well as rural communities involved in the processing of poultry, landscaping, construction, all of the sort of low-wage, difficult, dirty jobs that Americans don't necessarily want at those wages.
Yeah. And that brings us to the heart of the matter in a way, because it's while many of these communities are having a hard time dealing with illegal immigrants, perhaps don't want them, at the same time, they are filling these jobs that other people are not taking. So they are helping the businesses and, at some level, helping the community.
Absolutely. And that's the fundamental tension that explains why nothing is going on right now in Congress, why there's something of a deadlock, is because on the one hand, you have people in the country who believe firmly law and order. These people came here illegally. They shouldn't benefit. And then on the other hand, you have the business interests who employ them and all the consumers who benefit from the services that they provide, whether it's helping in the home or landscaping or construction or process the food that we eat and get at cheap prices.
So can you give us some specific examples of what you saw in North Carolina that illustrate the problem?
Well, in North Carolina, the community that I focused in called Siler City, the influx has been tremendous. In a period of a little more than a decade, you had from virtually zero to a high proportion of the students in the local schools were the children of illegal immigrants or illegal immigrants themselves. You had a local public health service that was feeling the effects and having to care for the a large number of people who didn't have health insurance. You had law enforcement, like we just heard from the police chief, who were dealing with a population that was afraid to come forward and talk about crimes. So it's really across the board. You see the impact on state and local governments, and that's why you see these efforts throughout the country to address the problem at that local or state level.
But when local governments take it on themselves, or local law enforcement officials come up with these creative solutions, that's problematical too.
It is a problem. Certainly from the perspective of the Department of Homeland Security, there's concern that their personnel are trained to enforce immigration law, and when the locals start taking it upon themselves, it can become problematic.
Did you find that people were concerned about terrorism, that was part of their fear in North Carolina?
The concern in North Carolina wasn't about terrorism. It was a more mundane concern about people on the roads who, whether they had licenses or weren't licensed or didn't have car insurance. But you've seen a linkage between terrorism and the issue of illegal immigration.
We're talking about what cities are doing to take immigration matters into their own hands. We'll continue the discussion when we return. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neal Conan is out today. At the national level, the debate continues over how to address illegal immigration. But on the ground, police and local governments are developing their own tactics to deal with undocumented workers. In New Hampshire, police have used trespassing laws to arrest illegal immigrants, while a town in Georgia issues identity cards to day laborers, regardless of their status. What's happening where you live? Are you involved in immigration issues on a local level? You're invited to join the discussion. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. With me in Studio 3A is Seth Stern. He's a reporter for Congressional Quarterly Magazine. He covers immigration issues. And we're going to take a call now from Brad. He's calling from Boise, Idaho. Hi, Brad.
Hi, how are you this afternoon?
Good, thanks.
One of our local counties here in Idaho has adopted what I think is a very novel approach to the problem. Rather than attempting to attack the illegal immigrants directly, one of the county commissioners here has used the federal RICO statute to sue businesses who employ illegal immigrants, thereby, you know, depriving them of a source of income. I've never heard of another use of the RICO statutes in this context, and the suits were just recently filed, so I don't know if it will work, and I don't believe there's any precedent for it, but I think it's a very novel exercise of the RICO statute to sue businesses who employ illegal immigrants.
All right, let's hear what Seth Stern's reaction to that is.
To be honest, I don't know about the use of a racketeering statute, but there is a fundamental issue there, is the role of employers. Since 1986, there have been on federal law sanctions against employers, haven't really been enforced, widely viewed as a failure. And the fundamental problem is if there isn't a pull, if there aren't jobs waiting for them in this country, illegal immigrants won't come. So to really address the illegal immigration problem, most people agree you have to address the employer-employee relationship.
Okay, thanks for your call, Brad.
Thank you.
And yet the whole idea of guest workers, which President Bush supports, is a non-starter in Congress, right?
Well, it's not necessarily a non-starter. There are a number of bills in Congress right now. The most recent was introduced by Senators John Cornyn and Senator Kyle of Arizona just yesterday. They would create a new guest worker program. There's also a competing bill by Senator Kennedy and Senator McCain, also in the Senate. So you have several alternatives. There isn't a lot of hope for movement this year, though.
The one that was just most recently introduced, maybe you could give us some details on that, and how is it different from others that have already been out there?
Sure. Well, the Kyle Cornyn bill, like the alternative, is comprehensive, looks at border security, tries to address the people already here and the people who might come in the future from other countries. The key for them is they would give about 5 years for those here illegally. 10 to 15 million people would have to leave the country and then could apply for a temporary worker visa once they return to their home country. Their key is they don't want to give amnesty. The big complaint is that people who come to this country illegally shouldn't be given a benefit since they were lawbreakers, or so the argument goes.
Here's an email from Tom, and he says, why doesn't the federal government enforce our immigration laws? According to the Constitution, power is not allocated to the federal government, deferred to the states. If the federal government wouldn't defend the states, are the states therefore permitted to defend themselves?
I think the argument would go that immigration is clearly an area that you want, like foreign policy, a national policy. You don't want each state having its own immigration policy. You'd have some would be beacons if they had less strict laws. Clearly, you want a national policy and enforced by the federal government.
All right, let's take another call now. We're going to go to Hugo in Clinton, New Jersey. Thanks for joining us, Hugo.
Thank you for taking my call. A comment that I had, and I'll take the answer off the air, is that there seems to be a bit of dishonesty when we talk about this national problem debate, in as much that if you look at American history, every time you want and you need cheap labor, communities are willing to put up with those groups as long as the numbers are not too high and they're non-threatening. In other words, you don't want to see too many illegal immigrants that look in a particular way hanging around corners, because it becomes an eyesore. And then the problem is that you need them, you want them, but you don't want to have them in a certain number. And then those people have a very interesting comment, is that they say that, but look, the police is being used as part of the political powerful elite to counteract this problem. When we decide that it has become an eyesore, we need to get rid of them. And now is the time that we're going to start cracking down on these people for whatever offenses. And some of the offenses sometimes have been in the book for long periods of time. They were not enforced. So there's a certain disingenuous dishonesty involved with this whole debate, and nobody's really bringing it up. And it would be nice if somebody spoke about that historical pattern that goes back to Andrew Jackson.
Hugo, did you immigrate to this country?
Yes, I did. But I'm a citizen. I'm a history teacher, and and I don't have any problems with that. But I gotta tell you, if you go to a town like, for example, Milburn Shore Hills, a very rich town, it's full of illegal immigrants, and everybody knows about it. But they're working very discreetly in the local restaurant, and you don't see them hanging around the corners. However, as soon as those numbers increase, like, for example, what's going on in Princeton right now, Princeton, New Jersey, very elitist, very wonderful town, beautiful university. The problem is that the public school system has now a lot of kids who are ESL students, Mexican descent, Dominicans, and now they're saying to themselves, well, now we have a problem. And as a teacher, to hear other teachers talk about these illegal aliens who are forcing us to have ESL programs here in Princeton, for example, Milburn, it really hurts. And then you really have to say to yourself, well, are we being honest about this national problem?
Yeah, yeah.
And how does the police, law enforcement work into this whole equation as a part of the political machinery to clean up the act, so to speak? Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks for your call, Hugo. A lot of really good points there. And I think the biggest point, a couple of things I want to follow up on, but one is, there's a level of hypocrisy here in this country, he's saying, about this, because everybody knows that there are illegal immigrants here, and they're working for lots of people, not necessarily only just rich people, but they're working in for farmers, and they're working in factories, and but nobody wants to deal with the problem.
Absolutely. There is that tension. And part of the problem is that the benefits and the costs aren't necessarily equally distributed in this country. The benefits in terms of tax revenue, a lot of the illegal immigrant workers have fake Social Security cards. They're paying into the Social Security system. They'll never get those benefits. And yet the cost is borne, particularly in terms of education or social services, at the local level. and you have local communities and states saying to the federal government, you're not fulfilling your obligation. You're not paying for the share of health care that you're supposed to. You're not paying for the cost of incarcerating illegal immigrants who have committed serious crimes. The federal government should be paying up.
Yeah. What about the pressure on school systems? That's a really big area where local communities are feeling this tension.
Absolutely. You saw that in California about a decade ago, and now you see it spreading into these other states in the Midwest and in the Southeast. Their school systems have large numbers of students who aren't necessarily up to their grade level. The schools don't care about the immigration status. They don't ask about it. Their concern is making sure that kids are in school and the kids that are in school are educated. So they need to hire English as a second language students. They're printing materials and calendars in two languages, and it creates a new burden.
Yeah. We're talking about local communities and illegal immigration and how local communities are trying to deal with that problem. If you'd like to join our discussion, the number is 1-800-989-8255. We're going to go to Matt, and he's in Ames, Iowa. Hi, Matt.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that here in Iowa, we've been working to attract a lot of refugees in particular, a lot of other immigrants, and people have been somewhat lax about trying to stop illegal immigration because Iowa's been facing a lot of negative population growth. So, you know, a lot of us believe that this is the way that we're going to strengthen the state. And it's a bit different than a lot of other states because we're kind of taking a gamble, hoping that the costs won't outweigh the benefits. But something that I'm curious about, whether other states are doing the same and how it's worked for them, but you know, the most noticeable thing here in Iowa is that we've had a lot more local Mexican restaurants open up because a lot of people don't see illegal immigrants, but they do see a lot of new types of food, whether it's Mexican, Indian, or all sorts of other things. And yeah, it seems like it's been a great benefit to our state as far
now,
as that goes.
I'm curious, Matt, when you're saying that the state is actually, it sounds like you're saying the state is it overtly encouraging illegal immigration as a way to increase the population, or is this just sort of an unstated?
Well, the most overt things that we've done is we've had we've attracted a lot of people that are seeking asylum to Iowa, and there's a lot of programs where, you know, we have sponsorship of families from other countries. You know, living in a city of 50,000, it was great to see people from all over the world going to my elementary school, and you know, we had a lot of different cultures we were exposed to. But as far as illegal immigration goes, I think that it's something that we're a lot more lax about enforcing. And so in a way you could say that we're encouraging it, but it's not something where we're necessarily asking people to illegally immigrate.
All right. Well, thanks. Thanks for your call, Matt.
Yeah.
How unusual would you say that is, Seth Stern?
I think you need to make a distinction between state policies that try to attract refugees or asylees who are coming to the country legally and settling in places that haven't necessarily had those populations, and a state like Iowa, where large numbers of meat and poultry processing plants are employing illegal immigrants as laborers, but it's not stated policy of the state to attract them.
Right. John in Texas, we're going to take a call from John. Hi, John.
Hi, how you doing?
Very good.
Well, I just want to say I'm actually an illegal alien.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in the United States for the last 20 years, working one job, two jobs, and sometimes even three jobs just to keep up. And I've been able to adapt to the American society. And I just want to say, thank you to the American people for letting me in. And unfortunately, I mean, I'm not proud of being an illegal alien, but I just want to say that a lot of people think that all these illegal aliens should apply and come legally. Well, let me tell you, I applied three times in the American consulate overseas, and every time I go, I mean, every time I apply, they deny it. I mean, all these people who are here illegally, that's because they will not qualify to come to the United States legally.
Now, you said you've been here for 20 years?
Yes.
Do you think you can stay here indefinitely?
I'm sorry?
Are you going to stay here indefinitely?
No, I'm leaving. I'm leaving in October. I'm leaving in October because after 9/11, the whole situation changed. Now people look at you differently. I mean, they look at you as a different. It's hard for me to say exactly how, but it's just different. It's not the same.
Yeah.
It's just unreal. And
let me just ask you something. In those 20 years, obviously you worked a number of different jobs.
Yes.
What kinds of questions did you get about your status?
I'm sorry?
What kinds of questions did you get about your status when you applied for a job?
Mostly they want to know if I was a citizen and if I was a legal resident. And because thanks to my English, which is, you know, I speak a little bit of it, I always say that I was a citizen, and they believe, and they never really took the time to check. And thank God they did. Otherwise, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. That's one of the things that I just want to say about these illegal aliens who come here. If they would have a chance, if you want to come to the United States legally, you got to have a college degree and have a very, very big checking or saving account in the bank.
All right.
Otherwise, you will be turned back, and they'll say, I'm sorry. And that's why these people, that's their only option to get in here.
All right. Thanks so much for your call.
I know they're breaking the law, but it's just part of the way the world is moving.
All right. Thanks for your call, John, and I wish you good luck.
Thank you.
And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. How about that, Seth Stern? I think the point that he made right there at the end, do you need to have an education? Do you need to have money in order to get into this country as an immigrant now?
There's definitely a recognition that the legal system does not take in or offer adequate spaces for the number of people who want to come to the country. Huge backlogs to apply legally. And that's why you have people coming illegally, and that's why you have efforts to create these guest worker programs that would accommodate the surging demand for people wanting to come here.
All right, we're going to be joined now by Chris Simcox. He's the owner, publisher, and editor of Tombstone Tumbleweed, the Tombstone Tumbleweed newspaper, and he's also the founder of Civil Homeland Defense and coordinator for the Minuteman Project. Thanks for being with us, Chris.
My pleasure.
Have you been listening a bit?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about what you're working on now.
We're working on expanding around the nation, basically reinventing a civil defense movement of citizens, retired law enforcement officers, military veterans, and concerned citizens who see Washington turning a blind eye to Homeland Security when we talk about open borders. And with the crime wave that's sweeping the southern border with drug cartels, human smugglers, and people from all around the world coming into this country basically unchecked, it's a serious national security issue. So we're expanding and we're becoming a political force, sending a message to Washington that we would like to see our borders as secure as our airports are.
Now, the Minutemen have made headlines in Houston recently. They've started videotaping day laborers and the contractors who pick them up. What do you plan to do with these videotapes?
Yes, we're exposing the hypocrisy again, that we have a double standard in this country. We have some people that are allowed to break the laws, and actually local governments and the federal government are allowing a group of people to live outside the rule of law in this country based on the color of their skin. And that's not exactly what this country is about. But we're looking at targeting the employers. Hiring, transporting, or housing an illegal alien in this country is a Class 5 felony. Why are we not enforcing those laws? And our point is that if we have those laws on the book, they need to be enforced. If not, then we need to repeal them. But what we have now is a double standard that's just unacceptable to the taxpayers. Taxpayers in Houston are fed up with funding day labor centers and paying for welfare for illegals when they can't find work.
Well, how do you, you're videotaping day laborers, but how do you know who's legal and who's illegal?
No, we're not videotaping the day laborers. We're videotaping the employers who are breaking the law and exposing construction companies, contractors, local businesses that, again, are exploiting a group of people. And this is a free market, but they're exploiting people based on that they will work for less, but but they're not collecting taxes.
All right, we're going to continue this discussion after a short break. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Our guest here in the studio is Seth Stern of Congressional Quarterly Magazine, and on the line is Chris Simcox of the Minuteman Project. And, Chris, we have a call for you from Mac. He is in Tucson, Arizona. Hi, Mac.
Yes, Lynn, thanks for having me on. And I live in Tucson in the southeastern Arizona area, which is where we're highly impacted by migrant laborers. And several of your speakers have come on, Hugo and Brad and even Chris, to say that the issue is not really based on the immigration itself and to call them illegals. This is basically a civil rights and a humanitarian issue, especially in southeastern Arizona. We have a situation where in Texas and in California they're forcing the migration more to come to the hot deserts. As you know, it's 115, 100, very hot in the deserts, and something 200 people have died so far this year. And it's a case where the Border Patrol passes these people by that are dying in the deserts, and humanitarian aid workers out there trying to keep people from dying, not to help them illegally or other migrate, are trying to help them and have been arrested and charged. Two humanitarian workers have been charged with felony arrest for trying to save the lives of these are, again, not necessarily illegals. These are migrant laborers crossing the border, families. These are people that live and work in our communities. And the Arizona agricultural community, I mean, people want to have it on both sides of the fence. They said to the Border Patrol this winter, listen, could you open up the border a little bit around Yuma, because this is where 90% of the nation's lettuce crop comes from. And if you could open the border a little bit and let a few more migrant laborers through, that would really help us out a lot, because we're, experiencing a shortage.
Yeah. All right. Thanks so much for your call, Mac. A really interesting point. A lot of people are getting hurt by this. And again, we're hearing about this hypocrisy. Chris Simcox, just as one last question for you, and if you want to comment on that call, I invite you to do so as well. But what would you like to see the federal government do? What do you think should be done?
Yes. Well, the caller certainly highlighted the disaster, the human disaster that's going on in the desert with the deaths. Border Patrol spending most of its time on search and rescue missions. We would like to see the government augment Border Patrol immediately with National Guard personnel to secure the border and force an orderly queue through authorized ports of entry that would stop the deaths in the desert, the human smugglers, the slave trade, the sex slave trade that's going on. It's such an immoral situation that the White House is silent about. We need to stop the deaths, and we're asking for the government to, effectively secure the borders, stop this trading of human beings, and show respect to immigrants by coming up with a guest worker program and a way for them to come, again, through an authorized port of entry legally.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us today, Chris Simcox, coordinator for the Minuteman Project. And Seth Stern, not entirely true that the White House has been silent on this. I mean, the White House, President Bush, has advocated a guest worker program. He is aware of these problems. He's from Texas. This is something that he does know something about.
That's correct. The president did advocate a guest worker program. He left the details out, hasn't really talked about it much since the election. The issue on the border that the Minutemen, both in Arizona and California, are addressing, a sense that there's not adequate border enforcement. Though in the last 10 years, that's where most of the federal emphasis has been. A lot more personnel, walls along the border. It has shifted it from urban places like San Diego into the desert and rural places where you do have more deaths and the need for smugglers to transport people across the border and exploit them has increased.
Many members of the local government in Houston have expressed concern about the Minutemen's presence there. So we turn now to Adrian Garcia. He's a city councilman in Houston. He joins us by phone from his office. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
What are your concerns about what's going on, what the Minutemen are doing in Houston right now?
Well, the concerns are that it's not a well-thought-out plan. There's a lot of mechanics that are not being considered. I mean, they want to go to what they consider to be day labor sites and videotape people and then embarrass many people for not doing immigration enforcement work. Well, our position has always been that the work of immigration enforcement is the job of the federal government. It is the job of the experts. I mean, there's so many details that aren't thought out. How do we videotape a group of individuals and determine that just because they're at a particular site that they are illegal immigrants? I
mean, and what are some of the major problems, the tensions that are created in Houston as a result of illegal immigration?
I mean, there are. I mean, just like in any major city, there's concerns that it is illegal immigration that is creating crime. It is a concern that illegal immigration is creating a problem with our public school system. I mean, so there's a lot of perceived faults in many aspects that are blamed on illegal immigration. But I really think the jury's out on that.
All right. And you have something like 350,000, 400,000 illegal immigrants in Houston. Is that right?
I don't know the number.
A lot.
I don't know the number.
Okay. But, I mean, have they been vocal at all in reacting to this Minuteman project?
The immigrant community, yes, they have. I mean, as well as Hispanic Americans have been vocal about it. I mean, it's just the issue that we are looking at the wrong place for the answers. I think everybody that I've spoken to agrees that, you know, whatever the level of illegal immigration is, it's a challenge. It's a concern. But it is the local community's. It's not the local community's responsibility to expend its resources in doing this work, but rather, we are supportive of the reforms in the immigration laws that have been proposed by groups like TMO. So there's a lot of work to be done, a lot of opportunity, I think, for improvement. But is it the local community's responsibility? I don't think it's. I don't think the answer is that it is.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Adrian Garcia is a city councilman from Houston, Texas. And Seth Stern, just to wrap this up, we've heard again and again there's a lot of hypocrisy around this issue. What we're hearing from local people is federal action is needed and federal help is needed. Is there any political will in Washington to really solve some of these issues?
There's a real deadlock right now in Congress, particularly within the Republican Party. On the one hand, you have a group, law and order types, led by Tom Tancredo, a congressman from Colorado, who say absolutely no immigration reform that helps people who came here illegally. On the other side, you have American business, you have Latino groups, you even have the AFL-CIO and labor all saying, let's get a guest worker program and some form of amnesty for the people who are already here.
All right. Thanks for being with us, Seth.
Thank you.
Seth Stern is a reporter for Congressional Quarterly Magazine.